Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped death at the hands of the Manson family? But what about the real-life brutal murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Rolling right along here on a Tuesday, Sabres Live. We have conference final play beginning tonight in the NHL with Carolina and Florida. Tomorrow it's Edmonton and Dallas in a redo of last year. And tomorrow we finally get back to the Amerks, who last played on Friday, Marty, yep, with a home ice win. And this is hard because I feel like I can't give entire context that led up to this moment. But I will say that Wi-Fi's brother,
Florian Jack-Eye?
Yes.
Not Harbor. Harbor and Florian. They are the Bash brothers for sure.
So Jack-Eye with Laval. I mean, I wish I had a reel of all the penalties he should have been called for already in the first two games of the series, including his very first shift in game two, where he basically elbowed Yoff so hard in the head that I was like, first of all, how no penalty? And how is the captain going to keep playing? Yes. Anyway, funny how it goes. Because Jack-Eye in the third got called for this, and I need your take on goalie interference.
Well, I think that this was, a little bit of a sell job by Devin Levi. A little bit, just because I want to protect my goalie union card here, because Florian Jack-Eye basically stopped at the top of the crease, a hard stop, and Levi, going for the puck, reached out with his glove, bumped into him, and then just threw himself into the net. But hey, you know what? That's part of the job, selling it a little bit. And then Jack-Eye ended up like going down by, being escorted by the linesman towards the penalty box after that. But yeah, that led to a goal. That led to a power play goal, which was huge. Yuri Kulig. But yes, there's penalties that you should be called for that you don't, and then there's penalties that you get called for and you shouldn't. And this was one that I don't think was a penalty, and it ended up costing Laval.
I'll say it. I think it's the worst goalie interference penalty I've ever seen.
And hey, we just showed the clip of me in Rochester taking a punch to the face, going down. We showed that like last week, and there was no penalty on the call. So I know what it's like sometimes to get bumped and not having any penalties called.
Incredibly, it did lead to the game-winning goal, as you mentioned.
Yes.
And that doesn't happen without a stunning pass from Rusek, mm-hmm, and the velocity, the release, the technique, the ability of Yuri Kulik, which we've talked about over and over and over. This turns out to be the game winner. He's top 10 in playoffs in points. He has two goals. Both have been lasers on the power play, yes, including one against Syracuse at the end of the second period, which wasn't a game winner. It just felt like a game winner because it took the very tight game from 1-0 to 2-0 Amerks into the third period, and they were very strong the rest of the way in winning that game. When you see this, dare I say, expected from Kulik, and marry it with his post-game comments that he still feels like he has way more to give in this series and hopefully beyond in this series, what do you make of what you're seeing from Yuri and potentially his understanding of the impact he still needs to have?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, look, the goal that he scored there, it's a great shot, but he's shooting the puck more, right? Like five shots in that game. Mm-hmm. He had five shots in game three against Syracuse, four shots in game two where he scored against Syracuse. To me, it's about the volume of shots. Yuri's got a great shot, but I'd love for him to be like an Ovechkin type. Remember when Ovi would have 7-8 shots a game and he was a wrecking ball? And that's why he scored so many goals, because he kept shooting. I would love for Yuri to have 6-8 shots like one of those games and then get a couple of goals. Mm-hmm. And I think that also is where I would want Yuri's game to go to the NHL. Like, get 3, 4, 5 shots per game at the NHL level. Like, don't just get out of it with 1 or 2, 1 or 2, 1 or 2. No, it's not easy, but have that mentality that you can shoot the puck from anywhere and beat goalies, because he has proven it at the AHL level, and he's proven it at the NHL level with a smaller sample. But I still think that if you give him 5 shots per game, the odds are on his side. Look, he's going to be a 12, 13% shooter, maybe 15% shooter in his career because of the quality of his shot. Mm-hmm. That means it's every 2 games. If he has five shots per game, five shots, he's getting a goal every 2 games. Every 2 games, yeah, getting a goal.
I think that's unrealistic. That's unrealistic to have 400 shots when playing with Tage Thompson.
Yes, so it is unrealistic. And I love your math, your quick math. 5 shots, 80, 400. Really on the ball.
Thank you. But even if it's 250, which I think is a reasonable number,
yeah,
you're obviously going well over 20. Last year, all of the production was even strength. The dream scenario, I think, from a depth standpoint, would be to have a more effective number one unit next year and have a very confident, with a prolific passer potentially on the second unit as well. And I think if prolific is too strong of a word, I think you already have defensemen more than capable of setting up Yuri Kulik on the second unit to have an impact here. But all of this ends up coming back to, and whether you want it to be Marner, and you've said it enough that I believe you do, but if you put more of a playmaker on Buffalo's top line, and JJ became more of a playmaker last year, even though the goals total was almost the same, his assist total went up, but he's not Mitch Marner. What could you possibly envision Kulik and Thompson producing if they had a Marner-esque left winger?
A playmaker, a passer. I think I could see. Look, Kulik, he averaged 2 shots per game, a little slight over 2 shots per game last year. Even if it's just 3 per game and he gets to 240 or 250, like you said, it's 30 goals. I'm saying that's 30 goals. That is guaranteed. You have 3 shots per game average. That's 30 goals. I think Tage, with a playmaker, a player like a Mitch Marner or somebody to that level, I think we're looking at 50. I think that's, and if you're getting 80 goals from Yuri Kulik and Tage Thompson, I mean, that's incredible.
You're getting 100 from the line, because Marner at minimum is going to get 20.
You're 100 goals from a line.
Right.
Think about it. You either have to have 330, 335 like goal scorers, or you get 150, a 30, and a 20, and that's 100. That is, like, if you score 3 on average per game, you're at 240 for the season. Mm-hmm. Almost half your goals would come from one line if they were to get 100.
It's not McGillney, LaFontaine, Andrechuk from 92-93 before Dave got traded, but in today's world, it would feel like it's...
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped death at the hands of the Manson family? But what about the real-life brutal murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Close. Now, if not Marner, which, dare I say, is probably likely, then who? Give us your next best fit to potentially fulfill this idea, rounding out Kulik Thompson on a top line?
Well, I mean, I did mention Nick Ehlers, but I think when you have a guy like Nick Ehlers, you're hoping to get more goals from Nick Ehlers, right? I think that's, for me,
I don't think of Ehlers that way. Am I wrong?
He has 24 goals this year, and I think that was a down year. So you look over his career, well, maybe you're right. He's never gotten to 30.
Right. He's more of a, I mean, he's slightly more of a playmaker over the course of his career.
Yeah, and he's a 60 to 70 point guy.
Like, which is Marner's not unlike JJ Paterka is now. So that's where I don't notice much of a change statistically.
Yeah, no, I think there's probably not a big difference. Although if you want to keep JJ in a different role, then all of a sudden, you know, maybe you have JJ with McLeod and Quinn, which was really good. And all of a sudden that changes your dynamic. You have Tuck maybe with Zucker and Kulik. And now you're saying, hey, a couple of veterans, which, so now that leaves you with Norris Thompson and a hole there. That was Zach Benson often.
Well, I was thinking Paterka, Norris, Tuck. Like, wouldn't that be ideal if the three played together well beyond this top line that has borderline superstar playing next to Kulik and Thompson? Like, if JJ is with Norris and Tuck, that's a really, really, really good second line, is it not?
That's a really good second line. I just, for me, I have this idea that Norris and Thompson are going to play together.
Okay.
And I know that a lot of people are saying,
why did we spend the last 10 minutes talking about somebody to play with Kulik and Tom? You could have interjected here.
No. I get what you're saying. And I think that's but I also think it works. Like, if you have if you have Kulik and Thompson at 50 and Kulik at 30, then maybe you're moving some pieces around to say, hey, you know what? That's a really good line. And maybe that's JJ there. I don't know. I like a playmaker like you're saying. I like a playmaker on that line. Could it be I'm going to go a little older here, and I don't know could it be a Claude Giroux? Claude Giroux is a fantastic playmaker, and now you're looking, that's a little bit more of a stretch. It's not somebody that you would bring in but that would fit that role really well. And Claude Giroux could be a power play guy, a playmaker power play guy too, maybe on the second unit.
He's not leaving, you know that.
I know, but I'm saying, like, a player like that, like, if it wasn't, yeah, I know he's not leaving Ottawa, but a player like that, like a playmaker guy that could be in for a very short term, you know, a year or two, just to give everybody a little bit more of a chance to get there, to develop a little bit more. So I'm looking at playmakers. I'm looking at guys that have the assist, that have the hockey IQ to be able to know their roles and say, okay, my role is to get Kulik and Thompson going, if that's how you would build that top line.
Well, at his best, and it's, I think, moot now, even though he is a UFA, but he was the guy I talked about at the start of the year, and it's Granlund, because he is far more of a playmaker than a goal scorer.
Yeah.
So, but I don't imagine that that's going to be the case now. It's Team Finland in Dallas. Why would he ever leave?
No, he's not leaving that.
He's made a fair amount of money in the course of his career.
What?
Life would be pretty good for him, presumably, in Dallas from here on out. If they want him, I would think he wants them. I honestly cannot envision Granlund leaving.
What if, and I know this will be weird, but what if it was Patrick Kane? What if, like, years after thinking we would like to have Patrick Kane, and he goes to Detroit and whatever, what if it's Patrick Kane, a playmaker like Kane? You say that's short term. Yeah. And now I think your Kulik and Thompson with Kane kind of opens the door to say, okay, that looks like it would work. And then you put Norris with Tuck, right? And now you're giving yourself and Paterka and yourself a really strong top six.
You can't. Kane typically plays his off wing, though, on the right side. So I can't imagine him being left here on that.
I think he could play the left. I'm not moving Thompson. I think Thompson, they've tried him on the left, and it's just awful.
Yeah.
You know, Claude Giroux is a right-handed shot, so he would have to play the left too as a righty. But, you know, I'm not worried about that. I think that those type of players that I think would fit can play anywhere. Mm-hmm. They could play, and maybe it's just saying you're not what you used to be. Mm-hmm. And maybe at your best, you were a right winger, Patrick Kane, on your off wing, but I'm going to put you on the left side because you need to be a facilitator for the other two.
Well, the great news for our audience is you're 8 minutes behind, so your best ideas are yet to come, and we'll try to cram them in next as Sabres Live continues.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped death at the hands of the Manson family? But what about the real-life brutal murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.